Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. At one point in Alice in Wonderland, the great book by Lewis Carroll, Alice declares, "But I don't want to go among mad people." "Oh, you can't help that," said the cat. "We're all mad here. I'm mad, you're mad." "How do you know I'm mad?" said Alice. "You must be," said the cat, "or you wouldn't have come here." Alice's trip down the rabbit hole and the kind of madness that she found when she got there has been a source of wonder for 150 years. Gregory Maguire is a best-selling author who has retold a number of children's stories, including Cinderella and Snow White. In Wicked, which became the basis for the hit Broadway musical, he wrote about the early life of the Wicked Witch of the West before she became so wicked. Now Gregory Maguire, who lives outside of Boston, has added a new spin to Alice in Wonderland, a kind of parallel tale in his new book, which is called After Alice. And he joins us now in the studio. And Gregory Maguire, great to meet you, and thank you for coming in.
Thank you, Anthony. Glad to be here.
So, as we mentioned, After Alice, but as we said, this isn't so much after as a parallel story to Alice, and it tells the story of Ada, who gets the briefest mention in Lewis Carroll's original book. So tell us about your main character, Ada.
Well, Ada is mentioned in Lewis Carroll, as you point out, in Chapter 2, when Alice has first descended into the netherworld, as it were, and she says something like, "Oh, the whole world is so different from what it used to be. I hardly feel like myself. In fact, I do think when I woke up this morning, I felt slightly different. But if I'm not myself, who might I be? Well, I'm not Ada, because Ada's hair goes in ringlets and mine is straight, and I'm not Mabel, because she's so very, very stupid." So by this one line in Alice in Wonderland, Alice refers to her life before the rabbit hole and her waking life. She never talks about her parents. She never talks about her big sister. She does mention two friends. I think of this as being Lewis Carroll's little clue that he seeded in the original novel 150 years ago for me to find. So I'm looking at her and I'm thinking, if I want to look at Alice in Wonderland again, then what is my door in? Well, I don't have the temerity, the audacity to write about Alice herself. She's one of the perfect creations in all of literature. But Ada only has ringlets. That's all we know about her. She's in Alice's life. So my book, After Alice, takes the story of Ada, who is traipsing along on the riverbank the day that Alice makes her descent into madness, her descent into Wonderland, and Ada goes after her, after her to rescue her, after her to find out what madness might mean to her. And that's where I start.
It's a great idea. I love the premise of this. Now, Ada, I want to ask you about how Ada differs from Alice. Alice is innocent, Ada less innocent. She's afflicted with deformity in her back, so she wears the weight of the world, right, in a way that Alice does not.
She's bolted into her life by an iron spine, which is not something I invented, by the way. 19th century children who had scoliosis, if they were middle class or above, very often had these iron rib cages that they would be snapped into from dawn till dusk. I decided to put Ada in this rib cage, this corset, this punishment, because, well, I thought about her ringlets, and I thought maybe they gave her ringlets because she was not actually otherwise very attractive. They were trying to make something out of her. I also wanted her to have something to struggle against. Mm-hmm. Because one of the things that we know about Alice from the way Lewis Carroll presents her is that she seems to have an unending fund of that thing that Coach Ted Flanagan was talking about 10 minutes ago, that resilience of childhood. Ada is a little bit more wise and a little bit more frightened. So I wanted to see what somebody else's path would be in Wonderland, somebody who didn't have Alice's innocence and was perhaps a little more frightened of the world.
Interesting. So there's another character I want to ask you about in your book, and that's Siam, right? He's a former slave. So introduce us to Siam and tell us why you wanted to bring him into this story.
Well, Siam is an emancipated slave, or perhaps he left the Southern American states before emancipation. He has been rescued, as it were, by an American and brought abroad to England so that he would not be repossessed by bounty hunters. This apparently happened more than once. This is not something I invented. Some slaves were brought to England where they would be safer. I wanted Siam in Wonderland because one of the things that we know about Alice in Wonderland for 150 years is that it's a picture of a very white middle-class Victorian childhood. Mm. White middle-class American children have always been able to figure it out. But I've always wondered what Wonderland might look like if one wasn't from the childhood of the ruling class, as it were. So Siam falls into Wonderland in his own way with his own demons yapping at his heels. And in some ways, because Siam's life has been the most like the madness of Wonderland before he fell into it, in some ways he understands it the best and knows the best how hard rescue how rarely it happens, how hard it is to be achieved.
It's so interesting. You mentioned, here's another thing that I love about what you do, and I want to ask you about this. You spend a lot of time in the book with characters who aren't in Wonderland. So I'm interested in sort of asking about how you think about 19th century Oxford above ground and Wonderland underground, because it's really intriguing to me.
It's a fascinating conundrum for a novelist, because one of the things we know about Wonderland from Lewis Carroll is that there's almost no cause and effect. There's almost no development. There's no accretion. Mm. It really is like a dream in that way. It's not a novel. It's not a cliffhanger spy novel. You know, it just goes on and on, unrolling like a dream. In order to get a little urgency into the story, I decided to tell the story on two tracks. Above ground, in Oxford, 1862 or so, Alice's big sister, who, as you will remember, was reading to her on the riverbank, has come to realize that she has misplaced her baby sister, Alice. And not only is she going to get in trouble, but if Alice is in trouble, then there could be something really dangerous about it. So I needed that above-ground plot through Oxford of 1862, with all its restrictions, especially upon girl children, in order to provide narrative urgency while Wonderland segments are unfolding more with the mothiness and inconsequentiality of a dream.
Mm. I love the way you stayed connected and reimagined all these children's stories, and I want to ask you a little bit about that. Actually, there's a couple of things I want to ask you about that, but do you remember, of course you do, what was your first response when you first read Alice in Wonderland?
Oh, I was petrified. What was yours?
Yeah, it was dark.
Yeah,
it sort
of
scared me.
Well, you know,
I
now think of it as like Kafka for kindergartners. I mean, it is. It's a little bit. It's your intro to Camus.
Yeah.
I mean, it is Dadaism before Dadaism was invented.
Yeah.
And for a child at the age of 10 who is trying to take in the information, the contradictory information about the organization of social life and of the universe, to come upon a portrait of childhood in which there is no correlation between the laws of the universe and the way the child must operate. Well, I think that's a terrifying thing. Childhood is generally terrifying. Alice in Wonderland was all of our worst nightmares when we were in the 20th century. And now I think when we're in the 21st century, until we're old enough to survive it.
Right.
It was different, I think, in the 19th century, because especially for 19th century Victorian England, children were given nothing but verities, nothing but certitudes. Mm. They were hemmed round. They were bricked in with trust in the empire, trust in God, trust in the family, trust in the class system. So the novelty of things being anarchic was just droll, just amusing. Now we live in an anarchic universe, so it's not quite so amusing.
Mm. Do you remember when you sort of went back and reread it as an adult and sort of that moment where you thought, oh my God, there's a whole nother different, there's a whole different way to think about this.
Yes, I do. I was probably 18 or 19.
Yeah.
And I was beginning to realize adult life was going to be mad in its own way. I was beginning to go back to the children's room of the library and get out children's books. You know, the way some people have comfort food in pasta and potatoes, I have comfort food in my reading, in reading the Grimm Brothers and the Perrault Tales, and in reading the great children's books. I picked up Alice in Wonderland again. I thought, well, let's give this a go then. And I suddenly saw it for the brilliant work of metafiction that it really is.
Yeah, and you've really compared Lewis Carroll to the greats, to Shakespeare, Homer, and Chaucer. Right?
And Nabokov and Emily Dickinson. Yeah. He pushes right to the very edge of what is known. Now, the one thing you'll notice, Anthony, is that the one truth that Lewis Carroll doesn't attempt to subvert in Wonderland is the truth about God. He was, in fact, in Oxford. He was at Christ Church. That was one fundamental plinth he was not setting about to topple. So from the vantage point of 150 years later, I can go back and I can look not just at Wonderland, but also look at what was happening to pietism and to faith in 1860 in the years right after the Charles Darwin came onto the public stage.
Well, it's such a fun book. Gregory Maguire is the author of Wicked, the basis for the Tony Award-winning musical and many other books. His new book is After Alice, and he'll be speaking about it tonight at the Trinitarian Congregational
Church. Tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night in Concord. And you can find more information at radioboston.org. Gregory Maguire, thanks so much for joining us.
Off with your head.
Off with my head.
Thank you.
And that's it for today. Radio Boston's a production of WBUR. I'm Anthony Brooks. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.